The Blazers Edge Podcast with Dave Deckard.
I'm a little distracted. I think the Blazers are still scoring on Denver.
And Phil Nasons.
Man, that was a beatdown. I knew that they would win big, but I didn't think that big. And they are still scoring. You can hear the balls bouncing in the background. And you can hear the voice of Bill Shonley saying, Rip City! Hey there, Blazers fans. We're back. That's right, the Blazers Edge Podcast featuring Dave Deckard and me, your co-host, Phil Nasons, is in your earbuds or on your website or wherever you're listening to us, and we're really thrilled to have you here. If you're listening at Max Sports Channels, we want to welcome you to this amazing Portland Trail Blazers show sponsored by BlazersEdge.com and co-hosted by none other than the exalted Poobah himself. Please welcome the managing editor of BlazersEdge.com, Dave Deckard. Welcome to your own show.
In your earbuds and on your website, I feel like a creepy stalker now.
All right. You heard my show the other day, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah, I was talking with Chris Willis about the how I found you and how I found him. Because on Twitter, because my emails always wind up in the spam, and I desperately wanted you guys on my show. And I said I stalked them on Twitter. But we're here.
Oh, yeah. And the rest is history. And speaking of history, what a nice week for the Trailblazers. 3 wins, San Antonio, down Oklahoma City, down Sacramento, taken care of as well. So that could have been a lot worse. They started the post-All-Star break stretch with back-to-back losses, horrible game in Utah, and just got racked up by Memphis and then turned it right around. So that's pretty good news compared to this time last week.
O ye of little faith.
Oh, I have a ton of faith, but maybe not when Memphis comes to town.
Okay, that's fair enough, but maybe I have too much faith. I exercised that mustard seed, and I put it in the ground, and it turned into a tree, and I loved watching the Portland Trailblazers take care of business last week. From the last time that you were here, folks, with us anyway, they defeated the San Antonio Spurs, and then they knocked off the Oklahoma City Thunder, and then they defeated the Sacramento Kings. It was a beautiful week to be a Portland Trailblazers fan, but what made my week so special, and it wasn't the best week I've had in my life, was watching and reading about this podcast, my radio show, and most importantly, the Blazers Edge website, how many tickets you folks have purchased so young folks could go and watch their stars, their heroes, play their very first NBA game or visit their first NBA game. I was just completely taken aback at the number, Dave.
Yeah, playing their first NBA game may be a wee bit beyond us, but let's just say if you're hoping to buy tickets to help send underprivileged kids to Blazers Edge Night on March 30th, you better do it soon because they're all but gone. Within a day or two, we'll probably have an announcement. So we don't want to cut it off quite yet because we've got the last little dregs. But yeah, we're going to do it. So that's fantastic. Basically, we looked at that challenge and took care of it. Over 1,100 or over 1,000 kids, almost 1,100 are going to end up going. So that's just a great event, great week, and thanks everybody who is helping out. It's fantastic, and it's going to be fantastic for all those kids.
I am so honored to even play a small part in it. It's just incredible what you've been able to do, and you listeners, what you've been able to do. You know, I know times are tough, but man, you all came through big, and there's a couple more days, so if you haven't had the chance to do so, head on over to BlazersEdge.com and check it out. Hit that link and send a worthy young fella or young lady to watch their very first Portland Trailblazers game and watch their heroes play. See, I said it right the second time. It's always the second time around is better, and I like it that way. And, you know, I've been getting a lot of feedback at Max Sports Channels about Chris's version of the Blazers Edge podcast. Well done out there, Chris Lucia.
That's right. He is fantastic. He has an aptitude for this, and his spot usually goes up Thursday or Friday or so, and he has guests on. You and I kind of keep it between you and me. We do one format of show, and then Chris comes on and does something different, so you get double your fun. And he's going to have some very special guests coming up within the next couple of weeks, so make sure you tune in for that.
Absolutely. Please do. It's either Thursday or Friday, and you can catch it over at blazersedge.com. You can also subscribe on iTunes, and you can subscribe on Stitcher, and we hope that you do. And we want to wish Chris and his guests continued success. You're keeping it up, making it harder for us to work.
Oh, yeah. Pushing the old guys.
Pushing the old guys. That's it. Yeah, and I feel like an old guy sometimes. But I definitely felt like a young kid excited watching this basketball team perform in the last week. The San Antonio Spurs first. Now, I'm going to ask you once again, is that the real San Antonio Spurs?
Well, if it is, they're in a lot of trouble, because the most standout point again in that game was how bad the Spurs were. And it was shocking. It's like, I don't want to over-dramatize, but it's like hearing someone has some kind of terminal illness, but you don't see them for a while, and then you show up and realize how different they look. That was bad. I mean, Tony Parker looked horrible. Tim Duncan was battling just fine, but everybody else was missing wide open shots. Kawhi Leonard had about maybe 8 to 10 minutes of really stellar play in his whole game. And that was it. And so if that's the real San Antonio Spurs, we can say goodbye to them pretty quickly in the playoffs, I think. But, you know, it's San Antonio. They're entitled to do whatever they want. They've hopped off of their deathbed more times than anybody else has even been on a deathbed. So you never count them out until they're eliminated. But that did not look good. And the Blazers handled them aptly. In fact, that was the game that got the Blazers back on the road to success. Wesley Matthews, 31 points, kind of tore them up. The guards actually both played really well. And, you know, the San Antonio just couldn't even dent the Blazers' armor.
It was a fantastic win. Predicted here on this show because, well, I just have a lot of faith in this basketball team. And plus, they had lost two games in a row, which they didn't do very often this season. They had to win sometime. And I'm glad they beat the San Antonio Spurs. Wesley Matthews was really good. Nikola Batum was really good. Aaron Aflalo was good. And LaMarcus Aldridge won the battle of the boards. And I thought that was big, too. And that was fun to see. It really was fun to see that game. And San Antonio did look different, didn't they? They did look old. Tony Parker looks like a shell of himself. I don't know. We tried to explain it on Monday, my daily show on Monday with J.R. Wilco, but how do you explain what happened to Tony Parker? He looks like a shell of himself right now.
Yeah, he shoots 1 for 8 in that game, and there's a couple things wrong with that. I mean, first of all, only one shot hit, but the other one is only 8 shots taken. I mean, that's not Tony Parker. I mean, this guy used to routinely rip up the Blazers. He would get out on the fast break, and Portland just couldn't contain him. And the Spurs got some transition buckets in this game. That's one of the things the Blazers haven't done real well this week, is they've been giving up a lot of layups, but none of them were by Parker. And 4 assists, just a non-game, basically. It's like he didn't even register, and that's just a shock. And of course, that makes San Antonio's lineup infinitely easier to defend, because it takes the pressure off of Portland's guards and Damian Lillard in particular, who's not, you know, an amazing defender. And if you don't push him, it's like giving the Blazers the advantage.
I think so. You know, I'd like to say it was probably because of the defense, but we know that's not the case. Tony Parker routinely rips those guys up. It wasn't the great outstanding defense. Something's off there, but that's their problem to figure out, really. Yeah. Wesley Matthews did look good, though, and Nikola Batum looked good. This basketball team, the starting five, looked really good together. They've been playing for a while now together. Because of those injuries, they weren't. Do you see a difference in them? Because I see a more crisp offense.
Yeah, I mean, look, the story in Portland right now, especially this week, it was pretty evident, is that this starting lineup is Kim Kardashian's backside, basically. and the bench is Kim Kardashian's personality. You kind of want to see one. You don't want to see so much of the other. There's a reason that the Blazers are doing real well, and it is that starting five. They are smooth. They are living large, and they are one of the best units in the NBA right now. So there's nothing that you can really argue about. There's nothing. I mean, Batum is having an off year still, going up and down, but it almost doesn't matter. The Blazers are absorbing his down season and still cranking out wins because everybody's so tight, including Batum, and everything he does off the ball and on defense and what have you just completely fits in and makes up for the lack of shooting most nights. And, you know, they've covered up Robin Lopez's offensive deficiencies. Now he looks like a baller. I mean, totally catches in the lane and you know he's going to score. And this is Robin Lopez. I mean, he's not the first name you think of when you think offense, but they've fine-tuned it so well that they get him his ball in his wheelhouse almost every time. And I'm scratching to think, when is the last time that he took a bad shot? Just never does it. And then, of course, Aldridge and Lillard go without explanation. Wesley Matthews with his three-pointers and opportunism. It's just a great lineup, and they're working really well.
They certainly are. CBS Sports doesn't seem to think so, though. You know, what do they know? What do Matt Moore and those guys know? Matt's my friend, and he's your friend, too. But what do they know? Here's what they said, though. The madness of the Western Conference in the 2014-2015 season is almost over. With one more quarter to go, we think we might have a good idea of who the eight teams are or who will be in the playoffs. Except Kevin Durant just went down with another foot issue. The Phoenix Suns and New Orleans Pelicans are still looking to pounce. And then they had this to say about the Portland Trail Blazers. 37-19 at the time of that writing, NBA three-star review, the Blazers should be fine. They're likely to have home court advantage in the playoffs. We should be constantly praising Terry Stotts for what he's done with the defense. Adding Aaron Aflalo could turn out to be huge, and you have to consider this team a championship contender. Overall, though, Portland's had a rough last 6 weeks full of disappointing defeats. Can't give this group more than 3 stars for that stretch. Huh.
It depends on, I guess, if you count injuries in there. But then you shouldn't speak positively of the Thunder either, because they've been doing poorly because of injuries and then got credit. So, yeah, I don't know. The whole star rating system, I always raise an eyebrow, that kind of thing, whether it's movies or restaurants or basketball teams. I mean, what is a 3-star restaurant? I mean, maybe it's kind of average overall, but it has one dish that's fantastic and they do it well. So it becomes a 5-star restaurant there. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. So in any case, I think, you know, if you want to say the Blazers are comparable to a few other playoff teams, I can buy that. If you want to say the Blazers are demonstrably inferior to any other playoff teams, that's a harder argument to make, I think. I mean, I know Golden State, you know, has a great record, but, you know, frankly, Golden State Blazers would be a great series, and I wouldn't necessarily think Golden State automatically wins that one. Memphis is more of a problem, particularly for Portland, and I could see that, but then I don't think that people are as high on Memphis overall as I am. I mean, they don't think of them as superstars and, you know, world beaters. So basically everybody else is even with Portland. So, you know, I just think basically everybody in the Western Conference gets 4.5 stars, and you leave it at that and say, what in the world is going to happen when it comes to April?
Do you ever wonder why, like, for example, they give Portland 3 stars and they've had injuries, but yet they praise the Thunder and they've had injuries too? They make excuses for these others, but don't give the same leniency to the Blazers. What do you think? What do you think that is?
Couple of reasons. First of all, you do it off the cuff, and I've done things like this before. I mean, there are posts and there are posts. I mean, sometimes you delve into statistics and try to make a real scientific approach. Sometimes you just want to write something that's spitballing to get conversation going. This is probably one of the latter, and that would be the second reason. It gets us talking about it. Yeah, if they give everybody 4 stars, there's nothing to talk about and there's no reaction. So some got to go up, some got to go down, and Portland's kind of an easy target because, you know, we're off in the corner of the country, don't necessarily have the track record, and our regular season record is about the same as some of the others. So you figure, we'll throw them in the three-star group and see what happens. You know, also with stuff like that, it's hard to be disproved wrong, right? The chances of any given Western Conference team excelling and coming out as number one are small. I mean, one team is going to do it. We know that, but we don't know which one. So basically, it's the old mob gang at the mob gag at the racetrack. You pick one horse and you pick a different one every time. And at some point, you're going to be right. I'm not saying CBS is doing it, but it's easy to do. And the chances of being disproven wrong are small because, hey, first of all, nobody remembers. And second of all, you know, 7 out of 8 people are going to be wrong. So it's not like people are going to point at you. So anyway, it's an easy thing to do. I'm familiar with it. I've done less of it as the years go along, but, you know, it still gets hits. So there you go.
Yeah, you know, I do this every day. In radio, you do this every day. You throw out things just to throw them out there and get people talking. I've gotten to the point where I can say one word and get a whole fan base after me. But it is what it is. You know, Memphis and Portland, I think they're the two best teams in the West. I would not want to see either one of those teams in a first-round matchup because they're going to be brutal. It's going to be awful to play against Portland or Memphis. I like what you said about Golden State, Portland. I like it a lot. I would love to see a healthy LaMarcus Aldridge just hammer them. I don't think that they would beat Portland in a 7-game series. I think that it's going to be tough for anyone to beat the Portland Trailblazers this season in a 7-game stretch, considering the fact that they'll be healthy, and they will be, hopefully, and that's a beautiful thing. But, yeah, I just like to talk about these things because it gets people talking. They're right. They're absolutely right. That's why I brought it up, too, because we want to hear what you out there have to think about what folks are saying about your Portland Trailblazers.
Oh, you never want to ask a Trailblazers fan that because there's never enough good. It's funny. If you get 19 national columns about how well the Trailblazers are doing and one, you know, Yahoo out there, maybe not from Yahoo, but anyway, prints half of a negative paragraph, guess what Blazer fans will fixate on? It's amazing. We are the most sensitive folks probably in the NBA. Not that people whine or whatever, just to, you know, we have this complex where nobody notices us. We never get enough credit. We're never put up on a pedestal with other people. We have to earn everything we get. So yeah, you don't ever want to ask a Blazer fan what national people think of their team, because you will be sitting for 3 hours getting the litany of all the time the Blazers have been disrespected.
Well, let's see. But, you know, I thought you were describing the San Antonio Spurs fan base there for a minute because they act the same way. But let's move on now to the Oklahoma City Thunder game. Man, I enjoyed that. We had a big snowstorm here, too. So I just sat back and watched a great basketball game. And, of course, the Portland Trailblazers were victorious once again. And I thought that was amazing. And Russell Westbrook, he's my favorite player in the NBA. You can write to me about that if you wish and try to correct me. It's all good. But he was like a dynamo.
Yeah, that was a scary game. Speaking of snowstorm, those two point guards were throwing it down and no two shots were alike, but there were plenty of them and they basically covered the court with their offense. It's amazing. I think something like, you know, I've got it here, 69 points between them. 16 assists, 16 rebounds, 24 made shots. I mean, it was scary. Of course, a lot of that had to do with Westbrook. He scored 40, but Lillard scored 29 as well. And you want to tag Damian for his defense, which has not been really good this week, even though, by the way, he won Western Conference Player of the Week. Congratulations to Damian Lillard. But, you know, his defense was not stellar, but I don't think it would have mattered that night. I mean, Westbrook, basically, he tired out in the fourth quarter And that was the reason that he didn't score 50. Other than that, he was just pitch perfect. And Lillard matched him almost shot for shot. He took it at him the other way. It looked like in the first half, the two kind of had a non-aggression treaty where they're both going to look really good scoring on each other, and neither one is going to stop the other, so that this game makes national TV, you know, headlines. And sure enough, it did. So it was fantastic. You don't see that kind of display very often. And it was just awe-inspiring to watch two guys who are so good at their craft put out such massive production.
Oh, yeah. Damian Lillard played great. Westbrook played great. And then he got his face broke at the end. Oh, well, that's a bummer. But LaMarcus, again, you know, this is what impressed me more was his rebounding. He just took over again. LaMarcus Aldridge is no joke. People forget that this is a great rebounder, too. And he's not scoring like he was, but how can he? You know, he's got two broken thumbs, I think, now. But still, he's rebounding. He's doing the little things. He's still unguardable. And it is what it is, but Oklahoma City Thunder fans were really ticked off about that broken face at the end. Man, blame it on Russell Westbrook, the whirling dervish. That's what happens sometimes when you play the way he plays.
Yeah, well, thank God it was his own guy who did it. Otherwise, we'd never hear the end of it. But, yeah, that game, that was amazing. That was the game that came down to intentionally fouling Westbrook when the Blazers were up three at the end of the game. And then they did it too late. Wes Matthews came a little too late and ended up giving him three free throws, which, by the way, I mean, Matthews is no dummy. I mean, he's a good defender. Everybody talks about that strategy as if it's bulletproof. It's not exactly. I mean, there are things that can go wrong with it. And when they do go wrong, you look pretty stupid. Now, are the chances of something going wrong smaller than the chances of someone hitting an end-of-game three-pointer? I'm not sure about that. It's probably still a better strategy percentage-wise. But because we don't see it that often, everybody crows about it like, this is absolutely foolproof. There's nothing to go wrong. We absolutely saw there are things that can go wrong with intentionally fouling when you're up three. And had Westbrook not missed that first free throw, this could have been a very different story. And also, he would not have had the dent in his head. So it was an amazing finish, a bizarre finish. It just cements that game as one of the more unique that you're going to see.
Well, that's a good way to put it. Unique. It was unique, but it is what it is. And you know something? Portland wins. And then I didn't even talk about the Sacramento game much because, well, it is what it is. But they went in to Sacramento, took care of business. Damian Lillard, again, was a beast. LaMarcus Aldridge was a beast on the boards. And it was a fun game to see. And the Portland Trailblazers, my friends, your Trailblazers finished the week, and we consider a week from our podcast to the day before to the day before right. Our podcast, a Portland Trailblazers week, 3-0, just like predicted on this show.
Yeah, and that Sacramento game, you know, I'm glad DeMarcus Cousins didn't play because he has just ripped up the Blazers like the 7-foot version of Russell Westbrook. He has been absolutely a nightmare. And him not suiting up really handed this game to the Blazers. They took advantage of it. Obviously, they had to play well, and they did. The starting lineup did anyway. The bench was somewhat of a nightmare again. But it was one of those games where you thought you should win it, and they did win it. They went roller coaster a little bit, but ended up with an 11-point margin. Damian Lillard scores 31 points. They can't stop him. It's been a fantastic offensive week for him. This game was a little more disturbing on the Aldridge end. We forgot for a minute in the hubbub of the Thunder that Aldridge's offense is still looking so-so. He's just not looking quite the same on his form. It showed up in spades, I think, in Sacramento. And it's not that anything's really broken, more that he's more hesitant. His release isn't quite as authoritative and smooth. When the Blazers need a score in the fourth quarter and the adrenaline is pumping and he's just going, it still looks like the same LaMarcus Aldridge. But throughout the rest of the game, you could tell there's a hitch in what he's doing. And there must be some pain there or some insecurity there as far as how his thumb is going to hold up with each shot or what have you. Because It's just not quite the same. And he was 9 for 25 in that Sacramento game, and he's just been a little bit off. And that needs to get taken care of before the playoffs, because the Blazers are going to need 100% of LaMarcus Aldridge. I don't know that it's going to. I don't know that this is going to heal without a month of rest, which at this point the Blazers don't have. But that shooting thumb could be one of the stories of Portland's offseason.
Oh, I agree. It's not a nice thing either, is it? It's not nice to look at. But, you know, you brought up the bench, and you made great points about LaMarcus Aldridge, and I don't hear them very often from other people, so I'm glad that you do that and you're able to. The bench, Aaron Aflalo, I want to ask you, how do you see him fitting in? How has he been the last 3 or 4 games since he's been a Portland Trailblazer?
Up and down, but mostly up. I mean, his release on his catch-and-shoot three-pointer has been stellar, and you can tell. He's just like an eager puppy right there, like, give me the ball, give me the ball, give me the ball. I'm open when he's out at the three-point line, because he knows that's what this team does. He knows that's his role. And you can see when the ball is coming toward him, it's almost as if a smile is running through his whole body, because he's like, I've got a couple inches of space here, and I'm going to release it as soon as the ball gets here. And it goes in. So that has been, I think, really promising. As far as his dribble moves, the rest of his offense, hit and miss. There have been times when he's been pretty good. He's tried to post up a couple times. That looked decent. But there's been a game or two where he's just been really forcing it. And you can tell he's, A, not that used to the offense, and B, not that secure with his role yet. I mean, I don't mean he's insecure in his role. As far as how he fits in is what I'm trying to say, that he's not quite at home yet, and it shows up when he gets the ball in his hands and has to do something with it. So I assume some of that will smooth out over time, so I'm hopeful. But it's been a little up and down so far. It's a good pickup, like we said. Whether it will make enough difference over the next month to propel the Blazers farther than they would have gone otherwise, I mean, who knows? How can you can't say or not? But he's doing well. Just it's not been seamless yet.
And it might not. You know, he's also making adjustment too. You know, he's coming off the bench, but he's averaging almost one more three-point attempt a game than he was in Denver. That's what you see, that smile, because that's what he is. He's a catch-and-shoot guy. That's what he does. And he's very good at it, very smooth, very fluid. I love watching him shoot. Always have. I think what's going to happen is, you know, if this is what I was thinking anyway. Maybe I'm completely out of there or out in left field. But if LaMarcus Aldridge was healthy, he would be drawing a lot more double teams. And Aflalo would get more opportunities, and he would see a better Aflalo, I think. I don't know. Maybe LaMarcus is kind of forcing some things too, because he wants to show people he can still ball, because he is in a contract year, even though it's obvious that he's coming back to Portland. So maybe that has something to do with it. But there's some things here that, you know, where he's down, it's probably because of the minutes, but he's like 2.3 rebounds down from his time now as it was in Denver. He's down an assist a game. He's down almost, well, about a third of a steal a game. And his personal fouls are up. So maybe he is having an adjustment issue. I don't know, Dave. But what I do know is this. He's going to come in and help this basketball team, especially knocking down threes. And in Terry Stotts' system, this is a perfect thing for him. He just has to figure out a way to fit in. I think the players on this team will help him do that. You know, it's a different adjustment for him. But when push comes to shove, he'll be there in the playoffs.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a different role, an adjustment for him. And that's to be expected. You're going to see some of those things go down because he's going to be playing farther away from the bucket. And he's going to be playing without the ball in his hands as much. So that's okay. I think the Blazers just kind of chalk that up. As long as he plays reasonably good defense and hits the three-pointer when called upon, they will be happy with his play. And everything else is gravy, and he'll bring some of that too. The guy that I think has been most affected, at least so far, and it's circumstantial evidence because we haven't had long enough, but Steve Blake He's had a really uncharacteristic week. He has not played well. I mean, Sacramento, case in point, 5 turnovers in 12 minutes. That's not Steve Blake. That, I mean, it was amazingly bad. And it's funny because even when the rest of the bench is going bad, it's not like Blake will be stellar, but he'll be that guy with the you know, even plus minus who gave you a couple shots and didn't make any mistakes. Now it's like he's off his wagon. And I don't understand what exactly is going on, other than maybe it might be a mental adjustment or what have you. Maybe it's just a down week, but we have not seen him perform real well.
That's a good point too. You know, his free throws are down too. Now, that's a guy who's usually pretty automatic from the line, and he is down in every number, considerably down. Minutes, like -7.2, -1 point points per game, less rebound, 1.4 less assists, and his turnovers are up. And that's not a good thing for Steve Blake. You know, he's had enough time in the league though, where his sample size is large, and this is probably just an aberration, not the rule, I wouldn't think. And I was going to bring this up. I might as well anyway, because some people are down on the guy, but he's coming back next year. Is this a good thing?
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad thing. It doesn't cost the Blazers anything, and he's a great team guy. He's got that intensity that you love, and most of the time he's going to play well. We'll see how many minutes he ends up getting, but yeah, I'd say that's a good thing for the Blazers. Also, interesting off that bench, Myers Leonard has started to see his minutes go, and he may be on his he may be on the last dregs here if things don't turn around. Not that he, I mean, he's had a great season. I don't want to say that, say he hasn't. He's been stellar. But the issue with him is it's go time now. And the Blazers have gotten a little bit deeper. And Darrell Wright's still hanging around, although he hasn't played. Joel Freeland is coming back. And he got his first minutes the other night in Sacramento. And obviously, Aflalo's taking more of those bench minutes and putting up more perimeter shots. So you've got a pretty high burden for Leonard to be on the floor right now. He's got to show himself worthy, and he's got to show himself able to produce. And as you know, with Leonard, that's kind of hit and miss, and the Blazers are going to have less patience with the miss at this point. So if Leonard doesn't really amp it up, you may see him start to slip out of the rotation now. We may have to say it was a good season for you, Myers, and great progress, and we'll see what happens next year.
And that's about what I was thinking too. And it's too bad because he was playing pretty well, but it is what it is. He did his job. And we say thank you. God bless you. And now it's time to move on. Joel Freeland will be back. I can't believe I just said that in a positive note.
Well, Freeland was never a bad guy. I mean, he was always your blue-collar, yeoman-type work ethic and what have you. So it turned out in the first half of the season, he added onto that really an intensity on defense and on rebounding that put him in another place than he had been before. He had another gear there, and he showed it, and he felt comfortable, and he produced. And that was one of the great stories of the first half of the season. So we'll see if he can reproduce that now after this injury. We don't want to bury Leonard too soon. I mean, Coach Stotts can just turn that right around, and they often do surprising things. Maybe Myers will get 30 minutes a game. I'm talking about Leonard, and I'm punch drunk on his awesomeness. But what will probably happen is that Freeland and Leonard will end up fighting for minutes, and the Blazers will probably decide they have enough perimeter players already now that they're going to go with Freeland's interior rebounding and what have you, and shade more towards playing a backup center than they will towards playing a backup power forward.
I think my problem with Joel Freeland is he was the 9th man off the bench in the first half of the season. I guess that was my target guy, the 9th guy off the bench, and I was difficult on them. And I haven't been difficult with any of the Trailblazers recently, and I won't be because it's time for
Blazers Edge Player of the Week.
Yep, it's time, folks, for your Blazers Edge Player of the Week. And I am going to say, let me see here. Let me think. I'm going to go off the board, and I'm going to take Wesley Matthews this week.
What? You left me Damian Lillard?
I had to, because it's only fair. Every so often I have to throw you a bone, sir.
Oh, well, that's a big one.
But I like...
So, yeah, go ahead.
I like Wesley Make your case Matthews. For Matthews. Absolutely. You know, over the course of the last three games, and that's what we're judging this by, he's raised his points by 2.6, rebounds 1.4, 1.1 steals more than he's been getting, and his efficiency ranking is at 7.0. Poor Damian. He was only the NBA Player of the Week, which is not as big an honor as it is to be the Player of the Week here. His efficiency rating overall was 4.3. So I took Wesley Matthews.
Huh. Well, the Oklahoma City Thunder game called and remind you of his 2-for-13 performance. But it's okay. Yeah, that's, I mean, and here's an argument that could go your way.
He was playing in that game because all we saw were Damian Lillard and Russell Westbrook.
I know. Wes is like, I still exist. In any case, Lillard, the NBA Western Conference Player of the Week, you love that. All the attention you can get is good. And obviously, offensively, it was a stellar week for him. I think he's a little closer to Matthews than most people would think because of the defensive end. And it's been kind of poor during certain stretches of these games. And it's the one thing that stood out negative to his game. So I don't give it without reservation, but I think you've got to honor all the points. And obviously the Blazers would not be 3-0 or anywhere close to it without Lillard scoring that much. He's made up in turn for Matthews and then for Aldridge not performing well, and then he's also made up for Russell Westbrook going bananas. So, you know, it's got to be Lillard. I'm comfortable with that. I think the rest of the NBA is comfortable with that. But this defense, look, by the time we get to the playoffs, they cannot have a chronic hole at point guard. There's only so much switching over of Nicola Batum and Wesley Matthews you can do, because in a 7-game series, the opposing coach is going to make up for that. They're going to figure out where you are rotating and which players you're switching, and they're just going to pick on wherever the weakness is. So I'm a little bit concerned about this, and Lillard has got to get back to at least playing semi-adequate defense, if not doing a little bit better than that. Otherwise, the Blazers' tenure in the postseason may be pretty short.
Yes, you're right. And you know what? I can't argue with your choice of picks, but I still like Wesley Matthews. I thought he had a great week. Forget the Thunder game. I didn't even realize that there were anyone else but Russell Westbrook and Damian Lillard in that game, except when LaMarcus was getting all the rebounds, which was funny because everyone was trying to tell me in my ongoing feud with the Thunder people that Enes Kanter was going to school LaMarcus Aldridge.
Enes Kanter didn't even play.
Well, that's the point. You know, they don't even know, most of them. They're a young fan base, but they are what they are. Now, I want to ask you something. The NBA is now releasing these little final 2 minutes of basketball games. The referees, you know, they were reviewing them internally and critiquing these fellas internally. Now they're making these things public. What do you think about this?
I think mostly I like it just because you see the NBA's thought process more than anything else. And that's been the big mystery, not just whether calls are right or not, but how the NBA deals with referees and calls not being right, how they assess whether a call is right on videotape and et cetera. So from that standpoint, I think it's a good thing. I think overall it will probably be a positive. The thing I'm always concerned about with officiating is that these guys are human and that they're allowed to be human. Obviously, you don't want a Tim Donaghy scandal happening. You've got to protect against that. But within the bounds of everybody being on the up and up, I don't care so much whether calls are right or wrong as much as I care whether they are consistent. I want consistency through the whole game. I want consistency from game to game from each official. And if a guy is calling one thing for 46 minutes of the game, I don't want him calling it differently in the last two. And I can live with his interpretation being technically incorrect as long as it's always technically incorrect the same way. I fear the human element of, hesitation, of second guessing, of what these officials are thinking of in those last couple minutes if this becomes a big deal, whether you start officiating for the videotape review instead of officiating the game that's in front of you, because you know that this ultimately is how you're going to be judged, maybe not just in public perception, but for the sake of your job. So that part I worry about. And ideally, I would not like to see anything about the referees. Ideally, they would blend into the background in a perfect world. But that's obviously doesn't exist. We don't have a perfect world. So maybe this is a decent solution kind of to bridge the gap. But I just hope that this kind of stays a background thing, that this doesn't become the sole method by which we end up judging referees or the sole method that they end up blowing their whistles for.
I like what you said there. When I was in a seminary in Bible college, I had a job referee in basketball, and I worked with a guy named Jack Young. His son pitched for the Oakland A's, Kurt Young, and the Tigers, or I'm sorry, not the Tigers, but the Yankees, whatever. He told me two things. He said, the first thing you have to realize is that you're better not seen or heard. If they forget who you are, you did a good job. The second thing he said to me, he goes, never critique one of your fellow workers publicly or privately. Don't even second guess them. Just do what you do and let them do what they do. One of the things that I fear, and I always have this fear, is when corporations, companies, the NBA is a corporation, critiques their employees publicly. You know, what kind of perception does that leave? Now, I understand the transparency issue, and I think that's a good thing. But when you start nitpicking over these calls, and you named it the best way you could, and I think that was excellent, what you said about consistency, and that's the key. I don't think that these things, these last 2 minutes logs that people are going to be able to read, are going to demonstrate that most of the time that these guys are consistent. And inconsistent in that basketball game, because every game is different and how you officiate these games are different every single day. And so I think that honestly, while it's a good thing to be transparent, I kind of fear that it's going to put an even larger X on some of these officials' backs.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, what we have to realize, I think, is that the definition of foul isn't just in a rule book. The rule book's where it starts, but the true definition of a foul or infraction is what happens on the court that is seen through a referee's eyes through at a particular angle. Okay, so it's not just an eye in the sky doesn't capture what ends up being actual fouls, and seven different camera angles don't capture it in a practical sense. It is what that referee sees from their position on the court that determines whether or not a whistle is blown. And none of us, including the cameras, are at that angle. And the problem with introducing other angles and other criteria and whatever is that the referees cannot utilize those. Sure, there's instant replay, but A, only on certain plays at certain times, and B, you don't want them stopping after every whistle to review it because it's already obnoxious as it is and it needs to get shorter and not longer. And C, even if you did it, their instant replay calls are not always correct. So it's not foolproof. So the more you're able to leave the definition of foul consistent, like that angle, that viewpoint, that referee, the better game you are going to have. The more variables you introduce, especially variables that the referees cannot utilize in real time, the more problematic you're going to make it and the more confusing it's going to be. So I'm not a huge fan of instant replay, having seen it for a few years. I am willing to live with missed calls occasionally, even ones that cost games occasionally, because I believe losing a game every 3 years because some official made a doofus call is in some ways better than dragging on a game and having confusion every single night because of instant replay and second guessing or whatever. I'm paying to see basketball. I'm not paying to see technical perfection from referees, nor am I paying to wait while they get calls right.
That was all well said. Judgment calls are the most difficult, and basketball is the one sport where you have to make a judgment call on every call. because nothing is ever by the book. Nothing. And you could be out of position. You could have gotten caught in the middle. You could have had to move out of the way of a coach. All kinds of things. And it's crazy. But my heart goes out to these guys. You know, I got to know Dick Pivetta a bit, too, in my time in New York. And he's a fantastic guy, and he's a good ref. I actually refereed a camp game that Anthony Mason played in. And that was a lot of fun. I took a lot of heat for it, too, believe me. But still in all, it's a tough job, and I have a lot of respect for them. And I hope that this doesn't backfire. I know that the players or the Referees Association is not for this. They weren't even asked. So it is what it is. It's kudos to the NBA for being transparent, but I wonder if it's such a good idea. We'll just have to wait and see. Now, finally, my friend, we have one more thing to discuss here. Well, we have a couple, really. Victor Kleber is no longer in the NBA.
Yeah, it's a sad day for all our Spanish fans. We hope we get another Spaniard soon because we haven't been without one for years and years now. I don't know what we're going to do, but I'm looking forward to the next draft. And hopefully we'll get someone from Spain on the team because I don't know how to write or exist without a Spaniard as part of the Trailblazers sitting on the bench and not getting playing time. How are we going to get our overseas articles about players complaining to their hometown media without someone from Spain? So we'll have to see how that happens. But, you know, Will Barton's still in the league. He gets traded from the Trailblazers and ends up racking up 22 points a night on a consistent basis. And it's interesting, shows you the difference between Denver system and Portland, for one thing. And that, you know, hey, Barton had a few tricks up his sleeve, apparently.
Yes, he did. But Victor Kleber is now playing for Khimki in Moscow. If you really want to know all about it, Emmett Ryan from Ball in Europe, he comes on my show every Wednesday, and we discuss that. And it'll be there, and you all know where to find that. Now, the Portland Trailblazers this week. They have games against the Los Angeles Clippers on the road on Wednesday, Thursday at home with Dallas, Saturday with Minnesota. Three more tough games in our Blazers Edge podcast week. How do you see this going down there, Mr. Exalted Poobah?
Well, the Clippers game should be the heat check there, the litmus test. If the Blazers win that one, they're going really well. And not that they don't have a chance to win it. I mean, they have a good chance. It's not an impossible game by any stretch. But it's one of those things where you're going, hey, we just beat the Thunder, we just beat the Spurs, and now we beat the Clippers too? That's awesome, especially on the road. So that would be a fantastic win. Hopefully they can get that. They certainly have a shot. But either way it goes, it's kind of a no-lose game for the Blazers. If they lose it, lost to the Clippers on the road, no shame in that. If they win it, fantastic. And then Dallas at home should be a win. Minnesota should really be a win. So there's a chance we could be looking at, what, six-game winning streak this time next week? That would be fantastic. Even five out of the last six would be fantastic, too. I'll go either way. Now, if they lose a couple of these, then you start to raise an eyebrow. But should be a good week for the Blazers.
It's going to be a great week for the Blazers and the Blazers fans because – on Wednesday night, the game is on national TV, which hardly ever happens, and they will knock out the Clippers in the Staples Center. There's no question in my mind. DeAndre Jordan's playing fantastic, but you've got the point guard himself, Chris Paul, who is a little less than spectacular these days, and then, of course, you got the scrappy Austin Rivers, so you have something to look forward to there. I see a win there on Wednesday, Dave.
I bet Chris Paul, I'm going to interrupt you for a second, because I bet Chris Paul gets better against the Blazers.
I would say so, yeah.
But the thing is that jogged my memory when you said DeAndre Jordan, because a couple of years ago we were hoping we could pry him away from the Clippers somewhat cheap because he was having a rough time. You know who just got released by the 76ers? JaVale McGee.
JaVale McGee is available.
Yeah, how would you like to Shaq to fool your way to the playoffs? That would be an interesting twist for somebody.
That would be.
I haven't heard whether he's gotten picked up or not, but just you said Jordan. It's like, hey, if you want a center, you could go out and get JaVale McGee, put him up against Jordan and see what happens.
I would do that. I think it would be interesting because that chemistry experiment in Denver went completely awry. No one seems to want that young fella. Now we have the next game, Dallas. And you've got Rajon Rondo. See, we've got so much to look forward to from a reporting standpoint because you might see a coach and a player getting a fist fight before this is all over. And I think that'll be interesting there. I don't see any issues whatsoever. That's on TNT, by the way. Folks, you aren't going to believe this, but you've got two nationally televised games. Three of the next four are nationally televised.
I hate to tell you this, Phil, but a couple of last weeks were on national TV, too. So something's gone wacky in Portland's universe. They're on national TV all the time now.
Well, that's a good thing, see, because we have to make sure of this. But still, I'm just completely stunned because ever since I've been covering the smaller market teams, this is kind of like a pet peeve of mine. I like to see these guys on national TV. When I talk about the Portland Trailblazers being good, people go, oh, yeah, right, because they've never seen them. And I want them to see them and appreciate them the way I do. Saturday, March the 7th at Minnesota. Chalk that one up already. I really think this is going to be interesting. But Kevin Garnett will be there, and that ought to be fun. So we've got all this cast of characters to look forward to this coming week, and I see another 3-0 week.
Yeah, the NBA just went crazy. I mean, not just at the trade deadline, but it's funny because there are storylines popping up all over the place now. It's just going to be an exciting month. And, you know, it's going to be really interesting not just to see what seed the Blazers end up getting, but A, how they get there, and B, who ends up on the other side of the bracket from them, who ends up on the other end of their matchup is what I mean to say. It's funny because you say, well, the Blazers could get a third seed, and you have no idea whether that is good or bad. And it's all going to depend on which way these stories go, who stays healthy, obviously, but momentum and which players are playing well and matchups. It's the most chaotic, mixed up, wonderful end to a season that I can remember. I mean, even back in the glory days when you knew it was going to be Blazers Lakers and those were going to be the two teams standing at the end. I have no idea who's going to be the two teams standing at the end of the Western Conference playoff battle. And it's going to be exciting to see.
It's going to be Portland and Memphis.
Yes, you said that. And that scares me, actually. Can it be Portland and Dallas or even Portland and Golden State? Because that would be better.
Clairvoyant Phil did not see it that way at the beginning of the season when he picked Portland and Memphis. And everybody told me I was crazy or drunk, and I was neither. I think that I just believe in both of those teams. They're my favorite two teams in the West, even when they weren't playing so good. So it is what it is. But it's going to be a fun week. And, you know, Blazers Edge Night is coming up. We still got a couple more days. So if you haven't had the chance, please click that link that's in the show notes here. And it's at Blazers Edge. And do what you can do. And we're really happy and thankful that you folks just turned out the way you did. We knew that you would. And we just want to thank you for that. Also, remember to tune in on Thursday or Friday for the Blazers Edge podcast, featuring Chris Lucia and whoever he brings on. And that looks good. He's got a host of guests coming up that you're going to really enjoy. You can catch this show every day, Monday through Friday, on Max Sports channels, as well as Chris's show, played at a different time. I think he plays that at 11 o'clock Eastern. I tell you, this has been a fun time, Dave. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. It's always a pleasure, Phil, and we'll see you. Well, we'll see you soon.
Yeah, we'll see you Thursday for my show. But until then, I want to thank you all for taking the time to listen. Thank you so much for the reviews on iTunes. You guys really understand this show and why we do what we do, and we're really happy. And if you get the time to do so, please leave a review at iTunes. Apparently, that helps getting us featured there. Until next week. He's Dave Deckard. I'm Phil Nasons, and we want to thank you for listening to the Blazers Edge podcast.